This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Everybody, Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio, another Town Hall Academy. Do I have a panel for you? I think it's been maybe every 3 years I get together. We want to do a SWOT, or at least a discussion of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's a strategy that people should be doing in their business. I went out back when I worked in corporate America. I'd love to do them. But one of the things I learned about shops is I always encourage shop owners never to do their own SWOT, never lead it, because you want your people to be able to talk and tell you the things that's on their mind that are really important to them. So how do you pull that off? Maybe you find a peer that you know who lives, you know, an hour and a half away, wants to come in and lead your SWOT, or even your own coach. I'm excited about today's episode because I think it's going to help an awful lot of people look at where my guests see the future of the industry going within at least the next 3 or 5 years, or at least all the opportunities, weaknesses, threats, and strengths that are in front of them. We've got great sponsors on this show. Listen to this great messages. Hey, did you know that Napa Trax has on-site training plus 6 days a week support? It all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Let us prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find Napa Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Hey, how well does your team know their stuff? Test their automotive skills with the Today's Class Basic, Advanced, or Service Advisor quizzes. It's a quick, effective way to spot gaps and grow stronger teams. Take the quizzes now at todaysclass.com/TC quiz. Shop owners, stop juggling multiple marketing tools. Kukui's integrated platform, they deliver 4 times better website conversions, automated follow-up, and real-time ROI tracking. Get industry-leading customer support with Kukui. That's KUKUI.com. You're probably tired of chasing new customers who never return. We understand. Pit Crew Loyalty ends the one-and-done cycle, turning first visits into lasting, reliable revenue. On the web at PitCrewLoyalty.com. Hey, welcome back. Whoa. Royalty. Love you guys. Dwayne Myers, Dynamic Automotive, 30 years celebrating it this year, right, Dwayne?
That is correct.
Do you sleep? Because you just opened your 7th store, I think.
Oh, I sleep well. I got a great team.
I know you do.
All about the team.
Good for you. Good to see you, Dwayne. Travis Troy, Honest Wrenches, 14 years in the business, 2 locations in Iowa.
Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you, Travis. Corey Evaldi's here, former Buffalonian. Just like me. Are you still a fan, or are you a Cleveland fan?
Oh, absolutely. Go Bills.
Olmsted Auto Care is in right near Cleveland, so I was assuming. But 10 years as the owner, but you've worked at Olmsted for a lot of years, right?
Yeah, 20 years.
Are you still coaching?
I coach a little bit. Yep. I still am involved with some of my clients and such like that with the Repair Shop of Tomorrow. And yeah, have a lot of fun.
Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And this is the kind of way that you would want to work it in these particular quadrants. You don't have to live in these quadrants, but it's what's real nice when you share with people what a SWOT analysis is about is that both the helpful and the strengths and the weaknesses are both internal in origin. The opportunities and the threats are external in origin, and strengths and opportunities are helpful and weaknesses and threats are harmful. So feast your eye on that, and hopefully you all will see where we're going with this thing. I'm going to do something that I never thought I would do, Dwayne, Corey, Travis. I'm not going to ask you guys to talk about your strengths, but I want to just, if you will, list them for these particular reasons. I think there's more to talk about in the weaknesses, opportunities, and threats for where we're heading as an industry. Travis sent me some strengths. We have a resilient industry and an aging fleet. Who's going to argue with those particular 2 points when we say that we're resilient? We always seem to come back no matter what. Look at pandemic. Corey says, we're always on demand. Average age of the vehicles is increasing. Shop diversity, a shop for every client. I love that piece. A shop for every client. And we could probably get into the firing the client story and letting them go down the road to someone else because they're not really right for us. That's probably what you meant.
Absolutely.
A national warranty program with national programs. And Dwayne, one of your strengths were the car park again. It keeps getting older. I don't know, maybe it's 12.8 years or something in that vicinity. The EV market has been pushed back. Interesting move, but it doesn't mean that you need to ignore it. And recession-proof, we can survive in all economies. So true. Nothing moves. We don't eat if we don't have transportation. Now, it doesn't mean that people are going to spend a ton of money, but there's a lot of people that won't go out of businesses unless they choose to. And they're really poor operators, and they didn't put any money away, 6 months worth of expenses, right? You guys all know. So let's get into the weaknesses side. And they've all done the research and their studies, and I want them to talk about it. Dwayne, and it's on everybody's list here in my studio. It's all about our team.
That's our biggest asset. Can be your biggest weakness or biggest strength. It can be all of these things.
Yeah, it can be. What are you doing about it?
We're doing tons, and I feel like we need to do more. But yeah, you know, we got our whole entry level, you know, as you know, and we've talked before, Carm, our entry level is rock solid with our apprenticeship programs. We have a waiting list, so we get to pick the people we choose to put in there. I mean, they choose us and we choose them. It's not a whoever comes through the door, but things that we learned from apprenticeship was, if that worked so well, why aren't we still doing more of it, which turns into our career paths, you know, where we're actually having a path for every single person, having opportunities. One nice thing about growing is there's opportunities for a team to grow, which helps with the retention, which is big. You know, I think everyone does struggle with experience help. And our struggle comes when we grow, we add a location. How do we feel that? There's only so much you can pull from what you have, and apprentices only learn so fast. I tell everybody that, you know, they have great knowledge, but it's time in that gives you experience, and there's no way to speed that up. But so we're attacking it from many, many different avenues, and I think we're doing okay, but you know, it's still a struggle, even with all the things we do.
That the gap in talent is so challenging, and I think you're right when you say you just can't wake up to it. It's time. It's time in the seat. It's time in the shop. It's time being side by side with some of our senior level technicians. And, you know, one of the things that we focused on, you know, greatest over the last several years is putting as many people next to our senior level technicians as we possibly can and multiply that. It's the same thing we did in our businesses in order to be able to grow them, to get us out of the seats that we were always in. We've got to take all of the knowledge and the wisdom that's within inside of our brain and spread it out amongst as many people as we can in the event that something would happen to us. And that same thing goes for our senior level technicians. They're not going to be around forever, and they're not going to want to do this forever. So we need some amazing mentors to help bring this next generation up to speed. And I think we went through a lull in our industry where we just didn't care enough and we didn't invest enough. And we're feeling that gap and that pain right now. I see the change. I see the shift. We're going to have to ride the wave a little bit and learn from it and never allow our industry to get put back in that situation again.
I'd like to add, Travis brought up a good point about, you know, developing our people and having places for them to go. Succession planning, you know, of course we have it at our level, but we also have a sheet, and it's not perfect, but you know, each location gets a sheet for their succession plan for the location. Like, who is the next location lead? Who's the next assistant? Who's the next shop foreman? And like, map it out. And then where are our holes? Where do we not have someone? And some stores are smaller and they don't have that depth, but a lot of them are big enough that they do. And it starts that guide. And now we can train and teach to that, pair them up. Like you said, put more people with the senior tech. Put more people with the leader of the company or go to leadership training. But yeah, we've been working on that. It's not done. Darlene would wish it was done, my HR, and she's the one that leads it. But we seem to fail just like we do in succession planning in general with that. But throwing it out there, it's a good thing to do. And we've gotten part of it. We need to do a little more.
That's actually really interesting. I like that concept.
Okay. So look, I've been out in the country and giving my keynote on the rise of the specialist, which is my big language shift and really trying to make us more professional. A couple of things have hit me most recently. I'm getting ready to speak to the Illinois Community College Instructor Association in a few weeks in a great big city of Peoria, Illinois.
Very nice.
You'd have to take a Piper Cup to get in there, right?
You're not far from Iowa, Carm.
I should stop by. And I ended up at a conference last weekend. I met the guy who was bringing me on. And I gave my speech and he comes out. He says, man, you're doing this for us in a couple of weeks. We're excited because education, there's a lot of them have stepped up, everyone. And if you're listening to this and you're saying, oh, this is this weakness thing, it's depressing. No, it's not depressing. It's an opportunity for us. And that this whole technician issue and growing our team and developing our team. Yeah, it's a weakness, but it's also a huge opportunity because we need to get in front of our parents and our educators. I can't tell you, I used to go into these local schools and I said, change the name on the outside of the building. This is not a skilled trade center anymore. It's an essential skilled trade center because everybody who's learning everything in there, we need them. And if we didn't have them, boom, goes away. We'd be really screwed as a nation, as a people. And it was COVID that put the word essential in it. And just 2 or 3 weeks ago, I'm doing an episode. I think we were off mic and someone says, Carm, I love your passion, but we got to drop the word trade. And it just hit so hard. We have to change the word trade to career. Think about what the word career means to people coming inside of our industry versus a trade. You're going to go out and learn a trade, son. You're going to come to my school and learn a trade. No, you're going to learn a skilled career opportunity. And I think the word career, in my opinion, which has been so strong of late, is it means home and family, and it means more than a trade. A trade, you could maybe make some money, but in a career, you could have something long-lasting. And then our opportunity inside is to develop a career path for our people, because we talk a lot about it, but we refuse to look at someone and say, we're going to teach you this unbelievable career. And in fact, as you come in as a mechanical specialist, we're going to teach you how to be a technologist or a technical technology specialist. There's so much opportunity. And I think one of the great opportunities we have is the diversity of the systems that we fix and the equipment that we use. And I think some of our young people will be marveled at the things that we do.
I agree 100%. You talked about weaknesses and opportunities on that. I moderated a panel for students looking to get into the automotive industry last night. And we had a whole panel of automotive professionals up there. And it's a weakness that we have in our industry, but it's a huge opportunity for the people coming into our industry. And it just makes our industry that much more appealing. I just remember looking into the audience and just kind of seeing the parents' eyes light up when I shared, you know, some of the information. Like, when you're one essential, two, in a resilient industry, you don't have to worry about a whole lot of things. Like, you're going to be okay. And you've got a long lasting career path. And we had some amazing people that started out as technicians and moved all the way up to shop ownership. We had people that started out as porters and moved to technicians and started out as technicians and went into the parts industry. Like, the career paths are so, amazing that you can get into this industry and just go about anywhere, and they're all rewarding paths.
Absolutely. This industry, there's so many different opportunities for people. We need to exemplify, we need to show that to a lot of these younger generations. I've always used career to kind of describe us because of that. There is such a longevity. Most of us shop owners were technicians at one point. I mean, what's the stat on that, Carm? I'm sure you know it, 80% or something like that. We're former technicians.
And the reality of it is we all went into shop ownership because we thought we could do it better than the guy that we worked for. And boy, were we humbled.
But you see, it takes a guy like Travis to get up in public and say that. See, unfortunately, part of our problem in our industry is that the realization of the missteps, no one wears them on their up. They just don't want to say, hey, listen, it was me. I did this. I know I should have gotten a coach 10 years ago. I know everybody wants to hide behind their mistakes. And I believe if you get up and over them, you grow as an individual and you can build your company.
I think you need to keep them out in front of you at all times. I mean, that's the wisdom that we need to share with the people that are coming into this industry or that we're mentoring along. If you just tell me everything that you did right in business or in life, the only thing that I can do is go try something that's probably wrong. If you tell me everything that you did wrong in business or in life, and I go try the opposite of that, the chances of me doing something right are probably pretty high. I actually thrive and I love talking about all my failures that I've had in life and in business. And I think talking about that has way more impact and longevity than talking about all the ways that I won. I don't think, you know, there's a very small place in that. And that, I mean, think about this SWOT, right? You're like, we're going to spend a very short amount of time on our strengths. And then we're going to spend the rest in the weaknesses and opportunities and threats. And I think that same thing goes when we're talking about our wins. Like, spend very little time on your wins and talk about all the ways that you failed and how you learned and how you overcame. Because I think that's where the true value really comes.
I think it's great to be proud of your wins. I totally get that. But at the same time, you have to keep moving forward. Right, Dwayne?
Yeah, I was going to say, we don't remember our wins that well. We remember the things that humbled us.
Yes.
As technicians here, we all remember the jobs that took us way too long that we learned because of that. And I take that and I believe that I use that in team member development and leadership development is, you know, embracing our mistakes and you know, you own them because now it's education. When someone actually embraces the fact they made a mistake and admits it, I now just move that off of a loss and put that right over to education. And it's the mistake they never forget. You know, right. They rarely make it again. They can actually teach other people. So as Travis said, they probably won't make the same one I made. But I always tell people, I tell my team, you know, I messed up here and here and here. Because it's like that overnight success. Yes, it was full of mistakes till I got there. Full of them. And then if you embrace them, others learn and you learn yourself.
So when I hear him say the word humble, it takes me back to episode 2 of Remarkable Results Radio. 10 years ago, Dwayne, his partner, Lee, and Jose were on, and I never heard more humbleness from three guys, and especially Dwayne, who was working in the bays at Dynamic back then. He was in interview two, 1,000-some ago. So, oh my God, it's amazing to stop and think.
Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NapaTrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NapaTrax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NapaTrax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com. Hey, Carm here, suggesting you discover a smarter way to train your entire automotive team. Experience powerful, bite-sized training sessions accessible from any device in just 5 minutes daily. It's perfect for technicians, advisors, and managers alike. Today's class prepares your shop for sustained success by reinforcing crucial knowledge. Plus, add a competitive edge with our leaderboard to make learning fun and rewarding for everyone. For effective training that delivers, turn to todaysclass.com. Shop owners, we know you are overwhelmed with a flood of missed calls, empty bays, and disconnected marketing tools. Kukui has spent over a decade building one integrated platform for auto repair shops, one login, one dashboard, and mobile-first websites that convert 4 times industry average. Smart, innovative CRM with automated follow-up, 24/7 online booking, and real-time ROI tracking. With 900-plus years of combined team experience, we fuel the growth of 2,200-plus shops and have influenced $3 billion in revenue. Stop working harder. Start working smarter. Get industry-leading customer support and book a demo with Kukui. That's KUKUI.com. You know, most shop owners feel trapped, spending on ads while half their first-time customers never come back. It's frustrating. It's exhausting. And it's not your fault. The industry average is 54% one and dones. We understand how discouraging that can be. Well, Pit Crew Loyalty changes the story. Our clients cut that rate by up to 38%, raising lifetime value by more than 50%. Loyalty members visit nearly 3 times more often, creating predictable revenue without extra ad spend. Pit Crew Loyalty, where customers stay and shops thrive. On the web at pitcrewloyalty.com.
Look, guys, I want to move on for just to respect our listeners' time. In weaknesses, Duane, you had, we don't have one voice as an industry and we're fighting each other. And under threats, Corey, I think that you talked about there was too much infighting. We talked about this before we turned on the mic and Travis says, yes, you guys are all aligned on this. What can we do about this?
And I thought that was funny because all three of us had this on our list, but we placed it in different areas. I saw it as a threat. Like, you know, our industry has got this black eye. What we do to each other and not support each other, like Travis, you were mentioning, why can't we be happy about the guy down the street that's running his business maybe a different way than ours and just keeping our lanes? Like, we need to be cheering each other on. You know, to me, it starts in our shops. It starts at our counters. You know, you get a client that's had a bad experience somewhere else, like, you just tell them that you're sorry about that bad experience. Don't feed into it. Don't be like, oh, they're a bunch of knuckleheads there. I wouldn't have taken anything. That kind of stuff, like, we do it to ourselves in this industry, and I can't stand it. It's hurting us all. It's not making you look any better because you're in the same association with the rest of us.
Turn on the internet, look at any of the pages. They're all bashing each other. They're all passionate. And at the end of the day, they're all right. If they would just set the ego aside and just cheer the next person on. The way that, you know, person A is running their business is great and they're going to do just fine. And the way person B and C is, and they just get so passionate that if one guy's running their business this way, it's wrong. If one person pays this way, it's wrong.
They recommend this service. Come on.
It's almost like politics and it just gets exhausting. I mean, I have such a deep passion for this industry and for the people that are inside of it that it pains me to see the division that's happening in our industry. And I think we can fix it. We just have to be aware of it. And we have to say we're just not going to do it anymore.
It's education and communication.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that bring our industry, that give us that black eye, because it's always a problem. When a customer has an issue with our industry, the person that helped them, whatever, maybe they weren't educated enough. Miscommunications happen all the time in our shops, with our clients, with our team. It stuff happens all the time. Without clarifying that, it just makes our industry look even worse. Look at the Hollywood projection of the automotive industry, you know, the grease monkeyness. You know, we talk about this before, but that's not the case anymore. A vast majority of the people in our industry are not looking to screw the next person over. They're not looking to hurt their clients. They're not looking to take advantage of, but it gets communicated like they are. If people can see the backstages and the relationships and what we see in our industry, we all go to events. I mean, these events are full of people that are hungry to learn. They have a passion for our industry. They want to help people. That doesn't get construed.
I think a lot of it's driven by fear, some of it, of what you're going to take from me.
Fear of acceptance.
Yeah, it's disturbing. But people are willing to get help that don't live close to me. I'll get phone calls from people that aren't close all the time. The thing is, I'll help anybody. You can be my neighbor, and I have helped. I think we need to be more open that we're in this together. We're not just competing. Let's face it, to me, we're not competing. We're helping each other. If we do things alike and are both good, we raise the industry up. But I mean, I think it's better. But the online forums and all have given them an avenue of getting to speak every bit of their mind. Some they should and some they shouldn't, because there's a lot of knowledge in there, but there is a lot of crap too.
There is.
But you know, I'll also say, you know, I just last week sat down with a guy local that's going to sell a shop. He's up there. He's very successful over the years. Great person. Didn't know him that well. Got to know him. I love the conversation. You know, he's like, are you all interested? I said, we are, but let's take this first as a, he's like, I don't know what to do. Well, here's what you should do. We've been through this a few times just from buying them. And I gave him some pointers. This is what you should do. This is what you should be expected to give, not give, how you protect yourself. And he's just like, I can't believe you're telling me this stuff. And I said, why wouldn't I? I said, it's got to be a win in the end of the day. And will we, won't we purchase this? I have no idea. You know, it's most likely not.
Duane, if you were doing this online, people would be saying, oh, he's wrong. He doesn't get it.
So I got this wild thought, guys, listening to you, and I wrote down, stop being an expert.
Right.
I don't know if that's right.
Nobody knows everything.
This is my thought. It's my opinion.
This is what I'm seeing.
But stop being an expert. What I'd love to find out, guys, I've said this on previous podcasts, the immediate response to somebody says, no, you're wrong, you don't get it. Within seconds, I want to know is, what do they do for a living? I mean, are they just waiting for social media to come up? Are they actually running a business? Do they fix? What's going on where the replies are so damn quick? And then I would love then to vet that answer and to find out, was that a Travis Troy saying that, a Dwayne Myers or a Corey Evaldi? Or was that a, I don't know, who's giving me this expert opinion? And I don't know necessarily we always know the right person. If the person's been ever vetted in our own mind, why would I take information from someone that I don't know?
That's a really good point. And also, I think when they think they're the best, when you think you're the best, I mean, you're just arrogant in yourself. And what you should be sharing is, here's what I did to get me here. Because if you think you're on the top of the mountain, all you have to do is just look up and there's somebody standing on a mountain a lot taller than the one you're on. So what got you here isn't probably going to get you there. And if where you are right here is where you want to be, then be amazing at that. And just understand that in order to get there, you can help people get there. But if they're going to surpass you, they're going to have to do something different than what you did. And that's where I think some of the opinions come in, and this is the only way. And it just gets exhausting. And I don't think that the people quite understand what they're doing and how they can truly confuse a young shop owner that's just trying to find a path.
You know what I just thought of? We should have had you on and just on one topic instead of trying to do SWOT all at once. Seriously, I may have made a huge mistake being so humble when I'm looking at all, I want to go here. My God, but this discussion has been just incredible. Dwayne, you've got under weaknesses, access to data, training and tool investments and ADAS calibrations. So let's talk about right to repair. Where are we with that?
Where are we with that? We got a House bill and a Senate bill. We are there. Actually, we were down 2 weeks ago on Capitol Hill. You know, the big difference, this is the third time I believe we've done this. First two times, a lot of questions, what is this? What is right to repair? They actually know what it is now. Even our newly elected officials know what it is. It's making enough headway that the OEs are putting advertising and all around when we're down there doing it. So it's making a difference. You know, people say, well, is it needed? I know this week alone, I got two cases where we couldn't do ADAS calibrations because now that those systems are dropped into secure networks. You know, we have the tooling to do it. You know, we'll purchase what we need, but, you know, in our different systems, some are blind, you know, blind spot monitoring, some are front cameras, radars, no longer able to do them. So what's next? You know, right. It's the newest generational stuff. It's getting peeled off without access to data. We're crippled. Repair data. We are crippled. We can't do the good we do. You can't even, the simple thing is changing brakes on a car. Become impossible on some models. So we're still doing the fight. A lot of work still to do. So I encourage everybody to be a part of it because it is our livelihood. It benefits our customers. But yeah, it's definitely further along than ever, but still a lot to do.
Thank you for your commitment, Dwayne, in working with AutoCare and getting in Washington for us. One of my great friends who continues to fight that fight. And I wanted to go to Washington this year, but I couldn't make it. Corey, on your weakness list, you wrote down access to continuing education.
Yeah, I just don't think that there's enough of it. You know, this industry is so rapidly changing. I know that there's avenues for training, no doubt. But I just think that there should be more, especially on the local levels. You know, and I'm not saying it's all the parts vendors' responsibility like that, but I would like to see more of it being available. And I know if I look, I can find more, I can find some, but it's just not as, I feel like compared to some other industries or some other trainings, there's more than what the automotive has. For the amount of technology that we have, the amount of stuff coming out, why isn't the education up to speed with it?
See, you put that as a weakness, and I placed it as a threat, just a slightly different angle. So I love how we've kind of planted them all, and this was unplanned as well, but for me, I think there's a ton of business coaching out there. There's a ton of service advisor training out there. I mean, you can pretty much drop a pin and get one of those, but
I want to coach for a technician.
Yes. Bingo. There is not enough of that. And some of our, just outstanding technical instructors are aging out and they are leaving our industry. That is going to create a massive threat for the continued development of our people.
Okay, Travis. Thank you for laying this right upside my lap. I did an episode with Matt Fonslow, Bob Leonard, and it was all about this. And ironically, guys, we talked in depth. We actually came up with a list of who's retiring. It's right on the episode, you know? Scott, John, all the way down the list. Eric, go down the list of people that flocked to our events. They were in high demand. And what are we going to do about it? This is the episode. Came up with this really cool idea. And actually, I have to present it to you and a lady named Sherry, because it has to involve an association willing, and I'm going to give you a little bit of the premise of the episode. We have scholarships for students to go to training. What about scholarships for people who want to be trainers to come and be taught by our legacy people? Wouldn't that be cool? A week-long, you know, train the trainer program. And we haven't even talked to John or Scott about this or whoever.
They've been voluntold, right?
Well, that's kind of what the episode's going to be, just like that. And I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but the thinking that's going on of this, the amazing, the top tier, everyone's in a line. It could be a weakness or a threat, but we're all feeling these kinds of issues and pains. And the next thing is, how do we solve them? And this episode started to go deep into it. Fonso even gave it a name. And it was just wild how it all came up. But I can't wait to publish that episode. But I'm going to keep this in mind, Travis, since I know you're absolutely heavily involved in Mwaka and, you know, the entire Vision event. And we're never going to have the breadth of trainers or even the width of knowledge to continue to teach our people if we don't start growing our own. And I met someone there. He says, yeah, I want to be a trainer so bad. But that trainer doesn't necessarily know how to present. Oh, I got a whole bunch of slides. I've done case study. No, that may not necessarily be the way to approach it. And they've got to learn how to do it. And if not, they're going to come, go to Vision, get a bad rating because they weren't able to connect with the group. You know how that works.
And it really starts in your shops. It's putting together workshops inside your walls and getting them to start training your people internally and then growing it to, you know, like Corey had mentioned, some local training. Our local Mwaka chapter does a really good job with bringing local training in and allowing them to broaden their horizon and get in front of, you know, if maybe they had 10 people in their shop, now get in front of 30 people and take those steps along the way to continue to groom and evolve their ability to be able to train and get in front of people and inspire them, because that's really what it is. It's getting out there and training and inspiring people to want to continue to grow.
You know, Carm, I love the fact of training the trainer, and I think it's the same thing we do with our technicians. You know, why aren't we having the apprenticeship program for the trainer? But also, what if you flip this around, you know, and talking about, you know, having good training? Well, we need people in the classes so they can pay for it and all, but
same people.
Same people every time. These are the same people. I guarantee you go to these, we know who's going to be there. The nice thing is we're all friends because we are all together, but there's so many, you know, there'd probably be more training events if we had more people to fill them because there is so many we can go to. That's the other side of that coin, though, to think about is I don't know how we're not training with the technology that's out there. At what point do you hit a line where you just can't function anymore and be relative to our industry because you haven't trained?
But you are, and you're replacing parts. You're calling a friend. You're trying to rely on YouTube or, I mean, stop me if I'm wrong.
The virtual and online training is great. I think there's a lot of that. For me, the way that I like in-person training. I've always liked the in-person stuff.
I doubt that if somebody's not willing to go to, you know, like a Vision, you know, and experience that, you know, take the money, take the time aside. If they're not willing to invest that time, you think they're really willing to go online and look? I mean, if they have that problem at that second, I'm sure they're probably panicking, but they're not preparing. by doing it ahead of time.
Okay, guys, look, wow. Let's jump into opportunities. In fact, that was the thing, Travis, you had technical trainers needed under opportunities, and you just slam dunked that right. Dwayne, under opportunities, you talked about EV hybrid, scaling, shop owners retiring. It's a huge issue right now. And AI, you know, we've got AI episodes coming up, and I don't think we can walk away from AI. I think we have to embrace it, but we have to embrace AI in the absolute right way. And AI works better if we don't give them one word requests. We have to get deep in it. I happened to see some stuff at this conference last weekend with, you know, glasses and AI, and it's just fascinating stuff where it's going.
We're using it.
Yeah.
And it's going to help technically, but it's also going to help you have a more professional, you know, there's your another word I like to use is professional shop. You know, like I need an onboarding process. We have one. It took us a long time to get one. You know, they say most people know within a few hours that they're going to stay with you by the onboarding process. If your onboarding process is literally, there's your bay, there's the bathroom, I'll be up front. That doesn't work anymore. AI can help with that stuff. You know, they can help you create that because we're no masters in that. They also can help you create your own training curriculum. Here's a book, dive into this. I want this out of it. And it helps you get a lot further along than if you tried to do it on your own. But it is a tool, just like any other. It is not the end all.
Right.
Yeah. For me, I think AI is great because it sorts through all the data for me. Now, again, it's a tool. You got to take things with a grain of salt. But one of the things I always say is information fixes cars. And it's now we're getting all this information from service manuals and, you know, all that Mitchell, Motor, Identifix, whatever the case may be, Google, GSM, you know. But I like being able to have a program, an AI tool that can sort through that and bring it to me in a better format, in a summarized, so that I can spend less time doing research and more time being productive.
Okay, what about EVs, hybrids, guys? Someone did mention that it may be taking a little bit of a step back, but if you're not in it, you're out.
Yeah, I think it's a huge opportunity.
I think it's something else that'll thin the herd. You have to have the training. You have to have the safety stuff. You have to have things dialed in if you're going to do this. But I think we have a little more breathing room with a shift in what people are thinking. But I do think it's an opportunity. It's the hybrid piece that's going to, that's where we're swinging back to, which I think is more of where we wanted to go for now. But another thing where we need more training, need more safety. There's all kinds of stuff to put in there to take advantage of it.
Point is that the shingle's not out. You're out. You're not doing it. I know it's word of mouth. I get that. If I'm a hybrid repair center, if you're not in it, someone told me the other day, just go out and buy a 10-year-old hybrid. It should be your loaner car.
One of my specialists bought a Bolt for himself. I'm like, he asked me about it. He's like, you think this would be good? And I'm like, for you, where you are in your career? And well, obviously his family and stuff, I maybe put in that. His wife still got a gas-powered vehicle. But I'm like, for you and your career, where you're trying to go? Absolutely. You know, I remember when we first got, when the IDS first came out and I was looking for buying a new vehicle. And I'm like, I'm going to go with Ford because I want to play with the new scan tool that we got.
You've got to take those steps and you've got to be prepared to be able to take that stuff on. The only thing that, you know, I've seen is people dive into these things, into these shiny objects and invest a ton of money and then it pulls back. And that can get slightly painful. So I think you've got to do a lot of your due diligence on the backside. You've got to continue to train and be ready. Like I say, you know, practice the dancing. And when it's your turn to get on stage, be the best dancer. Don't just be the first person on stage when you don't have an audience there to be able to support it.
We have limited funds. You know, there's only so much. And if you put too much in something, you're cutting something back. But I also believe that we are an industry now that you can't skip steps. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, as things changed, you could catch back up pretty quickly as a shop.
It changes so fast.
I think if you don't keep up in some way, it will pass you by and then you become the dinosaur.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On Travis's sheet under opportunities, he wrote M&A and private equity investments. He also put that as a threat. And so did Dwayne put that as... No, as an opportunity, I think, scaling, shop owners retiring, consolidators as a threat. It depends on how you look at it, guys. What's going on in your mind? I'd love each of you to speak to this whole entire consolidation phenom.
I don't want to be hypocritical because I'm doing it at a smaller scale, much slower, but with our culture and keeping it community-based, relationship-based shop. Yeah. I worry. Now, I have a lot of friends in this in this area. I don't deny what they're doing and the good they're trying to do. But all right, if you wrap all these up and you take all the mom and pops and you spin it to 200 shops, all right, and then where does that go? You know, they sell it. You know, all right, now what does it become? Does it look anything like who we are today? That's my threat or my worry, because I feel part of our greatness is the relationships we have with our customers. That's why we win. That's why 70% of the motoring public come to us instead mm-hmm. of the dealers. Is that still the case in 10 years? That worries me a little bit.
On the flip side, I think it creates a great opportunity for the dynamics and stuff like that that are still in those markets and thriving, because when all the consolidators do come in, if you power through that, you're going to have a massive, massive opportunity for client base when that word gets out. They're doing a really good job right now of kind of keeping it hush-hush, not really rocking the boat per se, but it's eventually going to come out that a place that you thought was locally owned is now owned by private equity.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I felt was really good with some of the consolidations, and this is more in the body shop industry. So body shops have a tough life because they're dictated a lot by insurance companies. And it took a lot of these consolidators and all these locations to finally stick it to the insurance companies so that they can charge more than $40 an hour in labor. I mean, body labor is still really, really low. I feel like it hasn't really moved until some of these bigger corporations came in and started buying up all these independents and being able to say, you know, if you want your clients, you're the insurer, you want your clients' cars to be fixed and fixed the proper way, this is what we're going to be at. And who are you going to go to change that?
I think that goes both ways, though. Those large consolidators also have a lot more pull and a lot more ability to negotiate with these insurance companies, where a 1-2 location body shop, they just don't have that negotiation power. And that, as a smaller location as myself with 2 locations, that can almost become a threat with some much larger M&A going on in consolidators that, their discounts, the way that they can order their parts, the kickbacks that they can earn just become so much that it makes it really, really difficult, especially for the single location shops to be able to even think about competing in that more or less a 2, 3, 4, or 5 location shop.
They're still going to try to combat you on price. Are they still going to have the labor, the staff, the personal touch that you can still offer?
That's where we win. And that's what Dwayne mentioned. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to lose one or the other. It's very, very difficult to scale at the rate that they're scaling at and be able to sustain the culture that you thought you created and was going to grow with you. It just doesn't happen.
Right there.
Yeah.
You're so right, Travis. The elephant in the room is this, to your point. Chatting with somebody a couple of weekends ago on this exact topic. And I said, my God, man, I know 5-6 guys that have done this. They're in it. They sold. And they're still part of. Would they come on my show and talk about culture and the people? And there's other guys that haven't done it and say, I've taken some people from there because it's not the same. And I'd like to know, is it the same? How much has the previous owner fought for this? And I don't necessarily know how to approach it. I just don't want anybody to get called on any carpet. Or maybe we just need to get some people together that have done this and say, you know, we're working hard. Our culture's good. We haven't lost hardly anybody. It goes back to this ugliness in our industry. Oh, you don't want to go to them because they did this and they're no longer locally owned. That would be a bad thing. That goes against this professionalism of our industry. God bless them. They did this. They made a deal. They're next. Stop being an expert at what you think they're doing.
Carm, you know who's really worried about this? Is our parts companies. The ones, you know, the program groups that, you know, that have built the relationships with us. Then there's an acquisition and all of a sudden that relationship's gone. Yeah, it's where you bring them on and ask them how they feel about this.
Like Dwayne, all of a sudden, oh, we have a new national account. Next week, another new national account. And then another new national account. These guys with 200 stores, it's a national account. You're right. You're 100% right.
It's anybody. It's our accounting firms. We all use, you know, these local accounting firms and stuff like that. And people that have been very loyal to our industry. I was actually asking in a conversation with our accountant, you know, have you felt it? And they've lost some people, but it hasn't been enough of an impact. But it will eventually become an impact for some of our vendor partners that have been so supportive of us and our industry as this, you know, continues to happen. But it's one of those things. It really depends on what season of life you're in. And obviously, we're not all going to be in this forever. And we've got risk and we're looking for reward eventually. And so it's a, you know, for a Dwayne Myers, this is a huge opportunity for them to continue to go out and grow. And for somebody else that's looking to exit, it's a huge opportunity for them to be able to exit. So it just really depends on what season of life you're in within business.
So it's not Dwayne Myers private equity. It's Dwayne Myers private local, private community. See, that's where he's going to grow.
There ain't no private equity money. It's sweat money.
I understand that. My point is it wasn't private equity. It was private community. It was like, this is what we do and how we do it and why we do it.
Dwayne's probably got a private equity company a week beating his email box down, you know?
Absolutely, they do. You know, how many dinners have you had, sir? Let me see. Which offer would you like? The one from last month? I know.
Which one gets a better rate?
You know, what they've taught me is, I wouldn't say tactics, but I've watched them and I've learned some things. And I'm like, wow, again, you know, always be a steward to your craft and what you're doing. And yeah, they're winning for a reason. So yeah, I've actually learned a lot from them. But I am a believer that everyone must win if you want this to be successful.
Oh, nice. All right, I'm going to wrap this up with some threats. We are going long, but I'm good with this thing. I heard too many crazy stories 2 weekends ago, hanging out with shop owners, supply chain quality issues. It was written in your threat, Travis, and I heard it a lot. And so I've got to ask this question. What's going on?
That'd be a really good question for the manufacturers and the suppliers. I think it's a continuous drive down in price for what us, you know, what we're trying to buy the parts for and where they're sourcing the parts, and just a whole slew of issues that they're experiencing. And not only that, they've had some extreme pressures from the government and EPA on how they've got to be able to manufacture some of this stuff and what they can put in some of it. And I think it's just really shaken some things up on the parts side of things and have really, really created some extreme challenges in just the pure quality of what we're getting. Now, granted, you can still go straight OE and still get a solid quality part there. But there's times when you get an OE part and you know it was produced probably right next to the aftermarket part that you got, and you set them side by side. And I don't think a lot of people really understand that there's not a whole lot of manufacturers out there anymore, but there's a lot of a conveyor belt on what boxes these parts go into.
To your point with the OE stuff, I find a lot of OEs with stuff on national back order. Yes. Man, like that to me is the worst. It's, yep, you got a car that's not even that old and we can't get a part and your only option is to find something used. Like, come on.
Discontinued parts was another big topic. Discontinued.
That's planned obsolescence, man.
Wait a minute. The cars are getting older, but let's discontinue. I don't get that.
Why isn't there like a minimum of support for these vehicles?
Go to my other threat that I have. This kind of rolls right into it, is OEMs attempting to try to control everything that we do. If they quit making that part and you can't get it and you're dead in the water, what do you got to do? You got to go out and get another vehicle. What's that do? That increases the actual cost of ownership of you being able to have that vehicle and have it on the road. I think that the OEMs are backing us into a corner, and I don't know that we're paying enough attention to it, but they are continuing to drive the cost of repair, drive the cost of ownership, and we're eventually going to get backed into a corner that it actually becomes more economical for them to just allow consumers to rent vehicles from them turn them in when they need it, come in for an oil change, do whatever they got to do, and you no longer own. There was somebody out there that said by 2030, you'll no longer own anything. And I think they're getting very, very accurate. I think their date's off, but I really don't think we're far off from hitting that tipping point of the cost to repair and maintain something versus just going out and having an OEM allow you to just rent it for $600-700 a month. That's an average car payment anymore, not including what it takes to maintain it, what it takes to repair it. You go out and buy a 5-6-year-old vehicle and you've got a $600-700 a month car payment. And then you get, you know, dropped a 60K service or, you know, wheel bearings or something else that goes bad or transmission or something else. I mean, that's a big threat that I think we have as an industry as a whole that we need to be very, very careful on with the rising costs. And I think the OEMs are watching us like a hawk. I really, really do.
That's a great observation. Wow. We almost have to get back together and start from A and go back to Z. There's so much here. Guys, I can't tell you how much I appreciate everything here to get this thing discussed. For our listener, this was profound. There was a lot of great stuff thrown around here. Did you hear anything for the first time? Maybe not. But if you hear it and you hear it often and you hear it coming from top tier shop, professional shop owners, it makes sense. Hopefully it drives you to make decisions and strategic decisions in your business, which is why I think this is so important. And should you do an SWOT on your own business? Absolutely. Should you sit down with your people and maybe not you be the leader of it, but someone else so that they can come and tell you? I think it is so profound. There's so, so much to learn about what your people think about the business, think about the industry, think about what their jobs are, think about the customer, think about the marketplace, think about the industry. I think you can take that information and do great, great things and make forward moving, leaning decisions. Wow. Final words. I'm going to go around the room 1 minute each. Dwayne?
You know, this was a great exercise. We did it more industry-wise, but I think what you said, you know, internally, it's good and have your team help you with that. But it comes down to me, even with threats and all, I mean, you got to look at them and all and get better. But our opportunity is amazing. You know, where we can go at, what we can do. Amazing industry. We can boohoo about things, but I think we got to fight what we can fight and then just deal with what we can't and move forward. But we can get better and we should keep trying to get better, and doing stuff like this helps.
Great point, Dwayne. Corey?
I've always been a fan of SWATs ever since I've been introduced to them. And when I was coaching, we did some Zoom SWATs and stuff. I've done them with my teams at the shop too. But to speak with Dwayne, I still am very passionate about this industry, and I can't help but see the longevity in it. So, you know, I know there's a lot of scary stuff out there, but there's been scary stuff in your life forever. You know, shouldn't paralyze us.
100%. Yeah. I mean, anything worth doing well is going to be challenging, right? And I think we're all on this call as extremely passionate people in an industry that we love dearly. And if we got into this industry because we thought it was going to be easy, boy, were we fooled. You know, I think the challenges will always be there. And I think having a level head, the want and the desire to continue to do what's right for our industry and bring our industry together and not separate it is how we're all going to win.
All right, Travis. Thank you. Dwayne Myers, Dynamic, Travis Troy, Honest Wrenches, Corey Evaldi, Olmsted Auto Care. Thank you so much for your great insight. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Carl.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.